Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast is brought to you by the fine folks supporting this very program at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Again, that's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. You can catch our ongoing Rebels commentary series and lots of other cool bonus content like t-shirts and much more. And you can see all of that over at, again, patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Yay. Ladies and gentlemen, coming up on this week's podcast, it's all Star Wars Celebration Europe. It's coming up soon, as well as a brand new information from EW. That's right. When I say brand new information from EW, I don't just mean that we're going to like read off of the articles that came out this week. Yeah, that'd be boring. We're going to the source, the man, Anthony Breznican, coming up soon on the Star Wars Report. But first, we got to get started for the regular show. I'm Riley Blanton, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate. I'm your host, as always, Riley Blanton. And we've got a great show for you guys. I'm so excited. And I gotta bring him straight in. Let's get him. No dilly dallying around. It's Mr. Mark Herleman. How's it going, Mark?
It's going well, Riley Blanton and my fellow Bothans out there, which brought me to a ponder.
Excellent.
We need to see some Bothans in Star Wars. It's about time, right? We've had them named. We've had them mentioned. We just haven't seen them in canon yet. So let's have a character show up sometime. Rogue One.
There we go. I tell you what, it's, We've got to have that, and I also feel like now that you're doing it too, it's all last names. Folks, let's bring him in straight at the top of the show. It's our brand new executive producer.
Oh, you got to say it with more executive producer!
Producer. It's Mr. Bruce... All right, here we go. James Gibson. Did I get the middle name right?
You are, like, so way off on that one.
Bruce Thaddeus?
Actually, Bruce is my middle name.
What?
Yes, Riley, for me.
Riley's like, my middle name. That's no way.
I got to change my name to Steven now.
Damn.
Yes.
Well, that's right. I wanted to bring Bruce on right at the top of the show because, Bruce, you've come on board in the last week. You've always been a longtime supporter of us and patron, but you have kindly joined the team to help out with the main show. So Bruce is going to be our producer. He's going to help out with the show notes and help book guests and help keep the show calendar going, help just basically make this show even better as we try to always have the most fun hour of Star Wars broadcasting in the vast realm of Star Wars podcasts. And Bruce is here to help us do that. Bruce, thanks so much for coming on both this week's program and coming on to help out with the main show itself. I'm excited. We got some big plans.
Yeah, like I'm very excited.
Stay on target.
I'll be saying that a lot, probably. Stay on target. But how do you make something so great even better? I have no idea, but that's what I'm going to try to attempt to
do with
you guys.
That's exactly, ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what's going to happen, especially as, like, in our first big battleground for taking this podcast to the next level. With more help and support and interviews and segments and all kinds of awesome stuff is Celebration Europe, which is just coming out right about now. And also we've got some sad news that has to do with one, the GL and Chicago. And also probably what I'm most excited about, with the exception of the Anthony Breznican, who we've got on the show shortly. I'm super excited to talk about this rumor about the Star Wars Underworld live action series. Haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, so that's, we're going to do all of that right now in the news.
We have something to report.
Closer, I have the news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Bad news for the city of Chicago, as it is official, the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art will not be constructed. It is a sad day. We had a couple weeks back Jimmy Mack from Rebel Force Radio on talking about the effort to salvage the situation, and it's just not going to happen. In fact, you know, who knows? Maybe it never will. But it's just kind of it's been a very high profile story. I've been surprised. It was like trending on Facebook and stuff, but sadly, It is gone. Bruce, let me jump off with you. Have you followed this much, and do you think this actually survives? Will there be survivors?
I don't know. I mean, this is what, strike two? Because first you had San Francisco, and they said no. And now Chicago, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they're saying going back to California, but they don't say where. We don't know where it's
Yeah, because there were proposals for L.A., but, like, the place was terrible. Jimmy Mack was talking about it. It was, like, out in the middle of the bay, pretty much, with nothing near it. So, like, maybe they'll get it done. It's just a tragic story, and it's sort of... I don't know. It's kind of like a mainstream exemplification, if I could make up a word, of Lucas being rejected by his fan base and then being rejected by the people who bought Star Wars from him, and now being just rejected by every city he's trying to build and give tons of money to for a narrative museum. It is like truly just a depressing story. I really feel bad for the guy.
Now, you guys think the Friends of the Park is who I'm hearing gets the most flack for killing this. Is that true?
Yep. End of story. Yep.
That's it. They're trying to save a parking lot.
Yeah. So we killed the museum to put up a parking lot.
And we're just talking a parking lot, not like a parking garage, right?
It's this parking. No, I think it is a garage, but I think it's this area that they use to park for like. Chicago sporting events, and they use it a couple times a year, and that's literally it. Okay. That's literally it.
I'm seeing the tailgating comments. Okay,
I just really wish that, and also what it proves is just that, as tragic as this story is, I think there is a takeaway we do need to have, and that is I was really impressed by the number of people in the city of Chicago that really went to bat to try to make this happen, because as much as I kind of led with, you know, my disappointment at how it seems like George Lucas is evidently just rejected by everything in recent years, I will say that there were a lot of high-profile, respectable entities that were really doing their best to get this museum in the city of Chicago, because there is an element of there is an intrinsic value to pop art, and that's exactly what modern cinema has been in the age of the blockbuster that George Lucas basically helped invent with people like Steven Spielberg. I almost said James Buchanan. James Cameron. That's not James Buchanan. Listening too much Hamilton. All right, let's get...
I live in a town where our downtown area is where all the main events happen, but we have no parking. Like, all you have is the street parking, which typically when these events are going on, they've got cordoned off.
Yeah.
So the only parking lots we have in town, we have no parking garage. That's like our town. We need a parking garage, and we don't have one. And the three main public parking lots during these events are just slammed. So people have to walk from, you know, 3 miles to the event because they're just looking for places to park. I don't know the situation of Chicago that well, but I almost wondered if that was something similar. Like, if this parking garage really was like the heart of a certain community, that like without this, you're going to be making a lot of people basically suffer unjustly. But I don't know if that's really the case. But that was something that just jumped to my mind, because you were seeing all this Friends of the Park and talk of the tailgating. I'm like, you know, what is it about the parking? And then I started to think about it from like the local point of view, and maybe that's really the end all be all of it all, is they just needed to park all them cars.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, now that we know the parking situation where you live, Mark, there's no way they're going to move the museum to where you are. Yeah. It's just not going to
happen.
Nice
try. Nice try, sir.
We have an NFL team. You know we ain't getting the Lucas Museum.
No. Hopefully we'll stay in touch with the story as maybe third time's the charm. Maybe Atlanta, Georgia.
San Fran. Oh,
come on,
San Fran,
George. No, Atlanta. Hotlanta. No.
It should be San Francisco. They really should be.
You think
Even
so?
Even though I live in Atlanta, it really should be in San Francisco. It should be near Lucasfilm. That's where it all comes about.
Here's the thing is, Lucas hates L.A., right? Like, historically, that's why he always tried to get his companies out of there. Like, if you read some of his biographies.
It's not L.A. There you go, George.
Exactly. That's why he moved out there. A lot of his companies are based out of San Fran and Petaluma and the surrounding area. So we'll stay in touch with the story as it continues, and hopefully we'll get an update if they try to move it to another museum. Because
speaking of updates, don't you have a Celebration Europe one?
I sure do. Oh, and I don't have my awesome audio cued. I should have had like the all rise for the national anthem. Man, but I do have a Celebration update, but a more important update I have is right now a guy, I'm going to see if we can get him on. Anthony, I'll tell you what, I'm going to add you to the main call real quick, and then we'll get you on. All right, we got him on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome his debut on the program, actually, Mr. Anthony Bresnikan of EW. How's it going, sir?
Oh, it's going really great. I'm really happy to talk to you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks so much for coming on. And we're going to really break down all of this brand new Rogue One stuff that came in via this week's Entertainment Weekly. It's the cover story. Mm-hmm. And but let me just actually ask you broadly, talk a little bit, because this is your first time on the show, talk a little bit about your history with Star Wars, and then how suddenly you are now the guy. You're often fishing out some of these amazing fan questions that we have, and you've become a great interfacing source for between Lucasfilm and the fans, and able to really, like, so much stuff with The Force Awakens. Like, how did all of that come about?
I mean, I don't know how far back you want to go, but I write for Entertainment Weekly. I'm a senior writer there. And a few years back, the editors were dividing up assignments. You know, we get beats. We get films that are our beats. You mm-hmm. stick to that movie all through the production. And anything that comes up on it, it's your responsibility. And number one on my list was this mysterious new Star Wars film that J.J. Nice. Abrams was making. So, you know, I got on that train relatively early, but I've loved Star Wars since I was a little kid, and it's the first movie I remember seeing when I was a boy. It was The Empire Strikes Back, and you know, as a part of that process, I've been very fortunate. I worked really hard to cover it. You know, I was trying to be pretty aggressive with it, and you know, I got close to the people who were making it. I know Kathleen Kennedy from covering a lot of Spielberg's work over the years. And when it came time last year to moderate the Episode 7 panel at Celebration, they asked me to do it, and that was a huge thrill. So I got to bring out the real BB-8, that he was a real thing and not a visual effect. And
that was
amazing. From there, very proud of the coverage that I've been doing at Entertainment Weekly. We kind of had the first looks at The Force Awakens last August, and then a really in-depth issue in November when that film was coming out, and just cover the hell out of it online. Every time we do a cover, it's like a whole week of Star Wars. So, yeah, I was really hoping to keep up that work on Rogue One, and so yeah, this is our first big cover on Rogue One,
and here you are. It's interesting because there is so much to go through, and even then, when we saw the teaser trailer just not too long ago, the only character we know much about is Jyn Erso, just by virtue of, like, we get a glimpse of who she is, but there are all of these other really cool background characters that we're kind of finally getting a look at. I'm not going to go point by point through, but walk me through the process of the behind the scenes, how you conducted the interviews, and then really, like, what really jumped out to you as you were developing this piece, as far as characters that really resonated with you.
Yeah, well, it's it's different every time you cover a movie, because it's always different filmmakers, and even if some of the people are the same, you know, I got to be pretty well trusted by JJ, and that felt great. It's just nice to feel respected, and that somebody likes the work you're doing and wants to work with you. And then starting over with a new filmmaker, I didn't know Gareth Edwards at all, except, you know, by reputation. And so, you know, just over the past few months, it's been a matter of trying to get to know people on this new team and talk to them. And you know, the magazine makes various offers, like, here's what we think we can do, here's, you know, when we'd like to run it. And I think, we had to settle on the timing. And then right around the time that it got locked in, where, I mean, so this is like a months long process. Back in April, we kind of finally figured for sure when we were going to do things. And And it's just a matter of like trying to schedule the interviews, trying to get the art in, you know, the images and what's going to be, you know, what's going to be the cover, what's that going to look like. That's a whole process that I don't think I'm speaking out of school here, but like that, the cover design went right up to, we closed the issue on Mondays. And like that went right up to like midnight on Monday, like getting the back and forth about what's going to be on the cover, what kind of vehicles, because I think the studio tends to want to hold back a little and the magazine wants a little more. And, you know, there's always sort of a give and take there. So sure. You know, the fact that we got to feature the TIE Strikers and,
yes,
and you know, show a little bit of this mysterious new tropical world. And, you know, I was really happy about that and glad we got the images we did. There's always more I want to know. You know, it's like as soon as you learn a bunch of things, it's uh-huh. like, okay, well, what are the next big questions?
Yeah.
But I was also really, there were a couple of big stress points in the process of reporting this. One of them was there was that leak of like some kind of Star Wars book, you know, I'm sure you guys saw that had some character names in it. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, mm-hmm.
We talked about it on the show. Yeah.
But I was like, oh, well, that's it. That's what we were going to report. Like, this is going to suck now. But thankfully, as I read that report, it was like, it just had the character names.
Yeah, it was like three things, too.
Yeah, it was like Cassian Andor. Like, he's a true believer rebel who's trying to unite to fight the Empire and destroy the Death Star. And then everybody's bio was exactly the same as that. Like, uniting with his rebel cohorts to bring down the Death Star.
Well, so it's fascinating, Anthony, because at this stage of the production, we're only we're mere months. We're about 6 months out from the release of the film, a little less than. And but we're still very much in an early stage. We just barely know. We've seen the teaser trailer, and even the most hardcore of the hardcore fans like us, as we're reading Entertainment Weekly, this is just the beginning as we're finally getting a picture of who these characters are and kind of what their interplay is going to look like. And it's just fascinating to see as the film kind of pieces together. If you were to, now that you've actually had the opportunity to learn about the characters and even interact with the people behind the scenes, there's always been a sense that this is a spinoff film. Mm-hmm. And what that has usually been interpreted as is that this one has a little bit more freedom to be thematically unique from the theatrical Star Wars films, from the main films. Do you get that sense? And if that's the case, how would you describe this movie? Is it a war movie? Like, because that seems to be the big kind of mystery. And now that we know something about the characters, because we've got a lot to talk about. Say nothing of like the great black evil one, which we'll get to in a second. But yeah, what's your impression on that note? I'm very interested.
It is a spinoff. You know, in fact, I think Lucasfilm really grappled with how to describe these films. For a while, they were calling them anthology stories.
Yeah,
and then,
I'm glad that died. I'm so glad that was.
Yeah, well, I think a Star Wars story is a bit awkward too. I would, you know, when I'm as a writer, I just wish I could write Star Wars : Rogue One. You know, I think they're bringing it around like to just kind of get people used to this idea. I mean, we're all really serious fans, so we know it intimately. But I think you have to respect, and I have to respect this as somebody who writes for a national magazine, like you. You've got to believe that there are people reading it who are not as familiar with it as the other Star Wars fans. So, you know, we sometimes it's a push and pull of like online. I think I get pretty geeky and in depth, but in the magazine, the print version, it's sort of like, okay, let's get everybody used to this. Like, let's sort of like be very expository and explain like, okay, you guys have probably run into people like this who are like, hey, how come Finn and Rey aren't in this movie? Like, where are they?
All the time.
Yep.
You know, every now and then when we publish one of these things, I'll see like some comment on Reddit or something. It's like, well, this seems like it's written for just anybody. And it's like, well, yeah. Like, you know, if only you guys went to see Star Wars, it would bomb. Like, you know, like in this one particular group online, like, yeah, you've got to open it up to everybody. And I think it is going to be a spinoff. I can't say what the tone is going to be. And this is a big question, right?
Yeah.
All I can say is what they've said the tone is going to be. And, you know, until we see the movie, we're just going to have to either take them at their word or be skeptical. And, you know, I don't think they would lie. There's no point in lying when you're trying to sell a movie about what the tone of the movie is. You don't want to say it's a gritty war movie and then people get in and it's not. Like, yeah. What you want to say if it's not is, no, you know, Star Wars isn't Saving Private Ryan. We're going to try and do something that's more in keeping with the earlier films that people love with all their hearts. So the fact that they are, that Kathy Kennedy and Gareth Edwards are saying, no, this is a soldier's story. This mm-hmm. is a battlefield story. It's a heist. I don't think that means there's no humor in it whatsoever. I think it means it's a battlefield story the way Captain America, The Winter Soldier was a 70s paranoid thriller. You remember
yeah.
when they were
oh, yeah.
you know, pushing that, like, this is a 70s paranoid thriller. Okay, well, it's not going to be 3 Days of the Condor. It's going to have elements of that. And I think that's what we're going to get. We're going to get a Star Wars movie that's infused with elements of a soldier story, you know? So it's not going to be, under any circumstances, should we expect, like, Full Metal Jacket
yeah.
in the galaxy, you
but-
know?
Maybe working title, Rogue One, A Soldier's Story. There we go.
Wasn't that it? Yeah, that was it, wasn't it?
It gives them freedom. I like that because the Marvel formula has proven it in that it's an enormous universe that has room for all kinds of different films within it. And so I want to see a Star Wars war movie. And I really hope that that's intact. That's sort of one of the big things that people, when everyone, you know, freaked out about the reshoots, like, oh no. They're going to dumb yeah. it way down. And I was like, come on, guys. I mean, reshoots, yes, the reshoots, even if they are expansive, I don't think that means they suddenly decided to totally change the tone of the film. They just, you know, needed reshoots.
Well, the reshoot news was the other big emergency situation that happened while I was reporting this, because in the midst of putting together this cover, okay, now we're hearing that the film is massively being reworked, you know? And so that's something... You can't ignore it. I mean, it's beyond the
spoiler alert. Is exactly what happened with The Force Awakens at various stages of the production process, and exactly what happened with like every Pixar movie ever. So yeah, I think it's interesting.
Stan's gonna run with doom and gloom anytime there's an opportunity.
Yeah, I'll go ahead.
Can I just say, like, what I find really frustrating is, you know, I really pride myself on never leading people astray. Like, I don't report rumors unless I'm 100% sure that it's true. Like, a few years ago, I reported, it was actually, like, shortly after they announced the spinoffs, that one of the spinoffs would be Young Han Solo and one of them would be a Boba Fett bounty hunter story. They haven't even officially, and it was 3 years ago, and they haven't announced the Boba Fett one. It's coming, baby. I know it. That was going to be the Josh Trank film. But I was so pleased, like, 2 years later when they finally said, we're doing a Young Han Solo movie. It's like, whew, okay, good. Because I thought I knew
and
I had
still,
that dead rights.
I'm trying to even remember that that's official, right? Because it's just the casting isn't official. Or is it? Because the casting
isn't official, but I mean...
It's official unofficial.
I mean, I'm sure we'll be seeing him at the Celebration.
Yeah, but I can't. Are you going to be at Celebration, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, sir, I will see you there then.
I'm not moderating anything this year, but I'll be in the crowd. So
I don't know if you remember meeting me, Anthony, but we actually met up at the Hilton after that panel. I got
you were hanging
up
with Tom, right?
Yep.
Hey.
Talk Clones now Ion.
Yeah, Cannon. They're with Ion Cannon here, actually here on the network, Ion right Cannon. Here. But yeah, no, that's that was such a fun experience. That was, and it's so cool because I can't wait to see what they have in store. For Rogue One at Celebration, but I think we've gotten a really good taste of it here, and we'll hopefully mm-hmm. see video evidence of a lot of this stuff. But I want to jump to you, Anthony, specifically on some of the outlying characters. We've got, of course, let's start off with Captain Cassian Andor, aka the code name for Biggs, right?
He sure looks like Biggs. I mean, he's got that 70s stash. So I don't know. That'd be kind of cool. I thought it would be cool if he were Biggs, but he seems to not be. So I don't know. Unless this is
a
misdirect.
I mean, the quote in the piece is a committed, steady, and practical, and seen more than his share of combat, and conveys a fair amount of experience and the reality of what it's like to do this every day. That doesn't really sound like Biggs. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, but he's an intelligence officer. Biggs wasn't an intelligence officer, was he?
No, he was just
a pilot.
Yeah, he's a pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you have all these guys. Which one is the ones that stick out to you? Like, what's your top three that you're most interested in finding out more about?
Among the good guys or just all of them?
Just in general, yeah.
Director Krennic, I think, sounds super cool. Like Ben Mendelsohn. You know, is it just me or does Ben Mendelsohn look like the smoking man from X-Files?
Yes. No, I've had that similar thought.
Every time I see him, I just think that episode of The Smoking Man where you find out he's like a failed writer and all that. Like I look at Krennic and I just think, is this really what you wanted to do with your life? Like he seems to have a death stick habit. Doesn't he just seem like he's standing there before that big map and he's kind of looking down? Doesn't he look just so pensive and he's walking across the water like where did things go wrong for you, sir? And I loved hearing. I mean, I think we all pretty much knew Vader was going to be in this movie. If he wasn't, that would be the shock.
Yeah.
But the fact when they told me that he and Vader aren't necessarily boys, I loved that. You know, because I think you get that with Hux and Kylo Ren too.
Yeah.
Is that there's
even
almost
Hux is gone.
What's that?
Even Hux is gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a very Shizor kind of feel. In Legends, there was a Falleen that got into his embrace that Vader did not like right out the gate, and the two of them were just butting heads all the time.
Well, I mean, and at this stage of the game, like Vader was supposed to be the ultimate like Sith successor, and then a little run in with Obi-Wan kind of reduced him to nothing but a dumb enforcer, essentially, is what it looks like. Especially if we have the sort of interplay between director Orson Krennic, which is interesting because basically the pitch here is that this is it is a sort of Shizor. I don't know if that's an unfair comparison, but here's the quote from John Knoll. He says the bad guy's a lot more terrifying when he's really smart and really effective. So I like the idea of this sort of. And again, it's hard not to compare to Legend sometimes, but I sort of maybe Shizor / Thrawn type character.
The description definitely sounds like Thrawn.
Yeah, Whoa. Absolutely.
I can't speak for the story group. Obviously, I'm not part of that. But I would say as an outsider, what I've noticed is, you know, they negated a lot of the expanded universe stuff. But I think that was done simply because they had avenues they wanted to explore, and they needed to unblock those roads. You know, they needed to say, here's who the kids of Leia, you know, whatever they're going to be, whoever Rey turns out to be. But here's who the next generation is going to be, and here's where we're going from this point forward. But I think they like the tone and the vibe of a lot of those things, you know? Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised. You see Dave Filoni doing this a lot with Rebels, like recanonizing elements of the expanded universe. And I think it's because they do appreciate those characters and respect them, and even in some cases really like those storylines. It's just they got to come up with, something that's a little more cohesive. You know, I think Noel told me there have been two or three versions of how the Rebels stole the Death Star plans.
There have been about two dozen, actually.
Two dozen?
I'm only slightly kidding. There was a Nintendo DS game. What was the name of it?
Dark Forces or Dark Empire?
Separate one. That Dark Empire was one, and then there was a different in Nintendo.
Shadows of the Empire was when you played Kyle.
Yeah, and then there's one where you play this Twi'lek spy. And then of course there's
science.
Yeah, there's so many different versions. But honestly, I want to see that on the big screen. And if there's an opportunity for a unique and different movie that tells that story, I want to see that. And I'm glad that they have that room to do it.
The thing about the story group that makes sense is the story group is now George Lucas, and all the people that were part of the story group were all the people that followed the continuity of Legends and were the keepers of the continuity. And so, you know, Lucas, he never saw it as, you know, Legends was never his universe. So the story group had to take that persona. They had to become George Lucas in that result. And now what you're seeing is just like George took from the EU and made it canon, they're doing the same thing. Yep. Only the difference is these guys have that information. They won't go out of their way and make a planet that looks exactly like a planet that's already been used. They're going to go, hey, let's slap a name on it and let's use that planet. Let's bring it over and make it canon.
And you know, another character I really loved is Saw Gerrera.
Yes.
The fact that he's being brought into this, and that's exactly what you're talking about there. When that was the character, nothing about him had leaked anywhere, because when they told me, it was Kathy's interview where she revealed that Saw was the name of of Forrest Whitaker's character. And I was just like, like you can almost hear in the recording, my brain goes squirt because I just thought that was the most badass thing in the world. And I could tell, like, oh, the fans, like, especially the serious fans. Like, again, like I said, sometimes with Entertainment Weekly, we have to service all sorts of different fans, casual, non-existent people who are not into it at all. Like, I can't tell you how many people I speak to who are like, I've never seen a Star Wars, but that sure sounds interesting. I just think, how do you not see Star Wars even by accident? Like, somebody's, how do you not? How do you miss it? But, like, this was one, the Saw Gerrera thing. I knew that that would just kind of, like, whoosh right by the heads of very casual fans. But I knew, I was like, oh, cool, I have something that's, like, going to excite the diehard fans.
Yes.
And I remembered... Saw and Onderon, and so I was really excited to see the evolution of this character as we see him from the Clone Wars.
And
to
you,
now.
In the piece, you uncovered that he wasn't just a Clone Wars character originally, right?
Well, he's mentioned in Bloodline.
Okay.
The new novel that Claudia Gray has out about Princess Leia. Like, he's brought up to her, and this is middle-aged Princess Leia when she's a senator after the fall of the Empire.
Yeah.
And it's brought up to her, like, you know, well, the rebels did some bad things too, like Saw Gerrera and his partisans. That, when I read the book, just again, that went right by me. I mean, I knew who Saw Gerrera was, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that that had resonance.
I may be thinking of a StarWars.com piece on the StarWars.com thing, because I remember, I believe it was Pablo, but I could be wrong, but was mentioning that George had a character in mind for, like, the live action series as this sort of rebel. And then...
It was never published. It was never put out anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that was internal. Like, yeah, they had the idea for where Saw would go if they were going to do this TV series. So they had material. George, at the very least, George had, like, a character bio for this guy that followed him all through the into the rebellion. Wow. And so they had that to work with. So when the story for Rogue One necessitated a fringe extremist who was also doing this for the good guys, that's when they suggested Saw Gerrera.
Yeah,
see,
absolutely.
You just blew my mind with the Bloodline reference. I remember that. It was when Gustavo was talking to Leia. Mm-hmm. About the terrorist actions of the rebels, and she couldn't quite deny it. But he
Castorfo,
had that
right? You mean Castorfo? Yeah.
That was just, oh man! And now when you think about that line that Whitaker says, "What will you become?" Knowing that, you know, he went that route and went basically terrorist and went completely. Wow, that adds so much depth.
What will you do if they break you?
Yeah, I the one thing that jumped out to me though was Saw Gerrera in the Clone Wars. His eyes, like, they were just so popping. They were so mesmerizing. They were one of the key elements of the character. That I had to ask the question of, you know, are they going to digitally make his eyes like the Clone Wars character? Is that just something we're going to lose because of the medias? I think we're going to lose it, but I would love to see him kind of come back and pay a tribute to that, because that was one of those features on that character that just popped.
Well, that's what I was thinking, too, as I was comparing the character with the images from the trailer. This was before we got our final shot of him. I was, like, noting the differences, that he has sort of a scar above his brow, but it's not through his brow like in the animated version, and he has brown eyes instead of green eyes. Like, I don't know the reason for why they wouldn't digitally change them. Certainly they could. Maybe they don't think... That's important. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably not enough of it's a visual thing that I think the big thing is that they're kind of pulling from the prior canon, but not exactly. I don't know. There's a difference between, and this is just the reality. It doesn't matter how much you like one over the other. There's a difference between Star Wars animation on television and Forrest Whitaker starring in a role of a Star Wars movie. And so,
yeah. Even Yoda looks different, you know, when you go back to the Clone Wars era. I like in the Rebels when they brought Yoda back for those visions, they made him look like the toy version from the 80s. Like...
That's true.
Like those, actually, that's so true. In fact, Dave said he wanted to put the little orange snake around his shoulders, but they didn't have the money for, like, animating a snake. So
that would be hilarious. I'll tell you what. One other one I want to touch on here is Mads Mikkelsen's character, Galen Erso. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've heard that last name somewhere.
Yeah, Jin's father, and you know, this again. I don't think this was the biggest surprise, because Mads Mikkelsen is nobody you want to trust with your secret. Mads Mikkelsen is the kid in school who goes right up to the girl you like and is like, hey, so do you like Riley? Like, because Riley's really into you. Like, he gives away everything. Remember when he autographed a poster, like when they were just starting production?
Wait, that was him. I forgot about that.
He signed it Galen. And so...
and then, of course, they had the TV appearance. I think it was BBC or Sky News 1.
Yeah, and he's just like, I play Jin's father. Don't tell anyone. Like, come on, man. Like, it's good for getting making a headline, but he seems incapable of keeping a secret. So, you know, he was out there already kind of revealing that. But, I have a lot of questions about Galen. And
as
his
do I. As do I. In fact, I think, honestly, the most compelling thread through this movie could be this, and it got me to thinking about it, because I don't know if it was Keri Hart or who you were interviewing that, but the subject of he's sort of a Robert Oppenheimer in the Star Wars universe. Go ahead.
No, please.
No, well, so here's I feel like I want to give a brief kind of overview of what I think this could be and why I think that this would be enormously compelling if they do it.
Okay. And before you launch into that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
As I'm making these character descriptions, some of it is from me. Like, some of it is my assessment of what the character is. Like, when I'm writing these, anything that's not in quotes obviously didn't come from them. Like, because as they would describe the character to me, I would throw things out like, so he's a scientist who has, like, knowledge of how the galaxy works. Is he kind of like a Robert Oppenheimer type? And they would go, yeah. Or with Baze and Chirrut. Like, Chirrut believes in the Force, but Baze doesn't, but he believes in his friend and is there to protect him. And I would say, like, okay, well, that makes it sound like a Don Quixote, Sancho Panza thing. And they would say, yeah, sort of like that. So, like, I just don't want to lead anybody astray. As you get into your theory, they tell me things that lead me to make certain conclusions. So I try to get close to that, but is from me. So that's a little caveat.
That's good to know, because what I'm about to tell you and the fine listeners is a theory of mine, and I'll just kind of bounce it off of you and see what you think. But what the thing about Robert Oppenheimer's like, oh yeah, he's the atomic bomb guy. He was a big part of the design. Mm-hmm. He's a nuclear physicist in the First and Second World War era, and he was a brilliant guy, absolutely brilliant. But also his own brilliance was used for the absolute horrible tragedy that was basically the end of the war in the Pacific through nuclear bombs. And it's such a, in retrospect, it's so different now. It's hard for anyone, especially as an Air Force guy, like I studied military history a lot, and it's just so hard to even wrap your mind around that era and even understand what it must have been like back then. But honestly, Oppenheimer later in life enormously regretted what his research was used for. And in fact, remarked that he actually said the quote publicly towards the end of life, from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the old Hindu text, but he said, now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
I think he said that the night of the Trinity test, actually.
Oh, really? Really? Wow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and that's so, like,
I think with those guys who worked on the Manhattan Project, it was sort of like, awesome, we're going to end this war. We're going to create this a powerful energy that can bring about the end of this conflict, and it's going to be this new thing, and who knows what it could be. And then as they got closer to actually accomplishing it, it was like, wait a minute, how are you guys going to use this? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them thought it was going to be detonated over a military base, or maybe we could just blow up an uninhabited island, like blow up Bikini Atoll at the end of 1945. And then it was blown up over two cities, and that really, I think that messed with a lot of those guys' heads. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of talk about if there's something that someone would reject your father over is if you learned that they are part of, you know, the creation of the the Empire's ultimate weapon.
And another theory I had, and I'm going to say this is just a theory, because I don't want people to go online and say that I'm spilling any secrets here. This is just my guess. But if she's been orphaned since she was 15, maybe what we have is a kind of North Korea situation where, you know how they like steal scientists from other countries, kidnap them straight up. I think Soviet Union did this. Who knows? Maybe we did it too. I don't know. But like, there has been a history in our world of countries that snatch scientists, you know? And I think maybe he went missing. Maybe he's working against his will.
Which would
get the feeling that he's a Bevel Lemlis type character. In Legends, Bevel was one of the engineers that architect the super laser itself.
Okay. Now, that would be interesting. And again, like, I think the idea of a reluctant creator of something terrible, that's compelling to me. I would really think especially if that became a fundamental part of his relationship with Jen, I think that is an angle that I would absolutely love them to explore.
Again, I'm just connecting dots here, not from any inside knowledge, but like, why do the rebels need her? You know, maybe it's because of her father's connection. They need her to help them track him down. Let's say he was stolen and he's working against his will. Another thing that would be super cool is, and this has always kind of bothered me about Star Wars, is like, okay, so you've got a battle station that's the size of a moon, and you're going to fire one rocket that blows it up. Mm-hmm. What if that flaw in the Death Star was actually a kill switch that her father creates? Like, I had to build this thing.
I've seen that that theory put out there, and I gotta say, it's pretty compelling.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? Like, I love how they can go back and retroactively fix these things that were just kind of, you know, broken or wonky.
Yeah, that became robot chicken bits, you know, throughout the years, and then now we might actually have a pretty good explanation. And that's exactly what this movie could do so well. Man, that is awesome, dude.
I like in Bloodline that Princess Leia novel I was telling you about, there's even a scene in there where they try to fix Carrie Fisher's accent in that scene with Tarkin.
Suddenly, we were just talking about that. I was like, Riley, did you catch the retcon? No, I was on the Wampa's Lair, and we were talking about that because she's all like, and I was even dishing it back. I'm like, oh, they explained away the accent.
I love that. I love that stuff. Because you know that's probably the reality, is Carrie was on set and you've got Tarkin and all these Peter Cushing and all these Brits around, and like, she just kind of started talking like them, just like you start talking like I start talking like Pittsburghers when I'm back amongst my people, you know, like, hey, what you doing over there? Go get some sandwiches.
I thought I could smell your foul stench the moment I was brought on board. So
yeah, I think maybe this plot hole of this exhaust port is actually going to be explained away.
That's so true. That's so
literal
true.
Literal plot hole.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, we need to touch on the big bad. Darth Vader is returning, voiced by the man.
James Earl Jones.
Yeah. Tell me, like, was this revealed to you in the process of getting ready for the piece?
Yeah, well, one of the questions I put to Kathleen Kennedy, she was the first person I spoke to about the movie. And it's funny because, like, in our conversation, this isn't in any story or anything, but, like, you know, she's very cool. She knows, like, okay, we're gonna talk about the movie now. We're going to reveal some things. And they have a certain way, a certain distance they're willing to go. I come into it and I'm just kind of like feeling around, right? Like, I know what's been out there so far. I know the trailer, obviously, and I know what I've heard and what the rumors are. And then it's almost like a game of I Spy.
Yeah.
You know, like, where I'm like, okay, so does the movie have any characters from the original trilogy in it, since it takes place right up close to it? And it's sort of like, yeah, warmer. And like, I'm like, okay, well, who's in it? And then at a certain point, she was like, you know, I think we can talk about Vader. And she even said to, like, the Lucasfilm publicist who was kind of listening in on the phone or had connected the call, she was like, I think we're going to, let's talk about Vader. And they're like, okay.
She's Kathy Kennedy. That's kind of like her job.
Well, there was certain things where she was like, there were a couple of things that I don't want to mention where she was just like, she started to talk about it, and then not in relation to Vader, but other characters. And then she was like, you know, I think maybe I'm spoiling a little too much here. And like, that's part of the reporting process,
sure,
too, because I don't want to spoil the movie for people. I'm not one of the reporters or sites that, and I'm not throwing shade at anybody, but I'm not going to tell you what the post-credit sequence is at the end of the new Marvel movie. I might say there's not one, or there is one, and you should definitely stick around, but I don't see the value in it. And I think people, JJ...
People are very self-selective about that kind of thing, because I was surprised at how, respectful the whole Star Wars community was of, the spoiler hounds versus the people who just wanted to go in and enjoy it. It was... Yeah. I mean, there were exceptions, but for the most part, everyone was pretty respectful of each other's boundaries.
But J.J. Abrams is there's nobody more locked down than him when it comes to secrets on a movie, secrets about a plot. And when he would talk to me about The Force Awakens, one of the things, for instance, that he revealed was that Kylo Ren is a name he came to when he joined this group called the Knights of Ren. And he doesn't say, here's exactly who he is, but he just plants that thing out there. And I remember there being some people who said, when that came out, oh, he just ruined the movie. What do you mean? And it's no, it's just a hint. It's just a clue. So, when it came to Vader, we were talking about him, and it was just are there any original characters? And she's yeah, maybe we might be talking about some celebration. And I'm like, well, come on, let's pump people up. Let's strike a nerve, And she was like, okay, I think we can talk about Vader. And I think, one reason she did that is if Vader weren't in the movie, people would be irate. Right. And so I don't think there's any.
I have a feeling that we're going to see some Vader in the next trailer.
Yeah, I have a feeling too. I don't know for sure, but
makes sense. I want everyone to close their eyes and then imagine being on the main stage at Celebration Europe, and they unveil the Rogue One theatrical trailer. And at the end, you hear the screen goes dark and you hear the breath. And then you see him do something super badass, and then everyone goes nuts. It's going to be great.
I would say, again, now here we are directing the movie ourselves. But, I imagine, you hear the breathing, and it fades up on director Krennic, and he's just got a big shadow looming over him, And he's being, you're almost seeing it from Vader's perspective. I'm almost, there were a lot of people are we going to see a new image of Vader with this rollout? And we don't have a picture of him, but I'm kind of okay with that. I want to see him in the movie.
I want to see, the first thing I want to see is actually a shot of him in the movie, not the still. I think that was a good choice.
I'd be cool, and I was cool with the Luke stuff, I remember as that movie was getting closer, people were like, why isn't he on the poster? Why aren't we seeing him? Mm-hmm. The thing that irritated me the most was that some jabroni snapped a picture of him while he was getting 3D scanned.
Somebody sent that to me, and I was like, ah, I had a brief moment of loss of will, and I'm so mad at myself.
It was hard to avoid if you were following Star Wars, just sort of maybe we just wait and see. I mean, he's going to look like Vader. It's not he's going to have a racing stripe or something. oh, cool new design.
Helmet.
But I guess it's
some secret that they keep, how cool would it be that Vader has to end up going off and chasing, Leia's group towards the end. But right before that happens, he gets damaged and we see the helmet cracked open and, oh, look, it's Hayden under the suit. Nobody knew that Hayden was going to actually be. We've heard rumors that he was going to come back, but they actually kept it a secret,
That was another thing is when they said James Earl Jones would be back, and I was like, well, who's in the suit? I asked Gareth, who's going to be in the suit? And he was kind of cagey about it. And then I had to go back to Lucasfilm a bunch of times and say, can we confirm who's in the suit? Because there were reports about different stunt people who were going to be in.
Yeah.
I'm like, is it going to be this guy? Is it going to be that guy? And they were like, well, and then I realized, I said, okay, are we not saying it because, maybe Gareth wasn't sure who was in the suit at that point. Is it just random big guys now?
Hey, you.
That's kind of what it is. I think they have a stable of performers who now fill that suit. And they were concerned, don't say it's a bunch of people because that makes it sound like he's in the movie a lot. And I think he's in it in a very limited way. I don't want to say small way, but I don't think he's the main villain by any stretch. I don't think he's in the movie a ton. They were finally, it was just it's just a variety of actors. And I think nobody wants to make it less special because it's not one guy. But even back in the day, David Prowse got a lot of attention as the Darth Vader, but there was a different guy performing Vader when he would do the sword fights.
Bob Anderson. back
yeah, Bob
back.
Anderson. So, you know, I think when you've got a character who's in a mask, it's sometimes the actor you think, and sometimes it's just not. You know, yeah. So I think that was one of the elements. And people were saying, "Oh, well, it's going to be Hayden," and some people at Lucasfilm I spoke to were like, "You know, you'd never put Hayden in the suit anyway. Like, he's not a big enough dude to fill those shoulders." So. Unless you're showing the face, there's not really going to be a need for him. But I know a lot of fans of the prequels want that. So
oh, believe me. There's a 13-year-old inside of me who saw The Phantom Menace as the first movie I ever saw, mm-hmm. and it'd be great. But then again,
wait, you didn't see a movie till you were 13?
No, no.
Wow.
13 or 14? Yeah, I have a weird history because I grew up overseas mostly. When we got back stateside. I finally got my opportunity to start digging in. And I really wasn't really into Star Wars until around the time of Revenge of the Sith. And then here I am. It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy
Anthony,
how it works.
Real quick, is there anything special about Alan Tudyk's? I know I'm butchering his last
Tudyk.
Name.
Tudyk, yeah.
His droid character. Is there anything special about how they're capturing that? I thought I read something that they're using some motion capture for that. Is that correct?
Yeah, performance. Yeah, motion capture, performance capture. He'll basically be wearing the pajamas that look like Chinese checkerboard, you know, and he's got like the mask, the little, I think a little headpiece with a camera on it and dots on his face. And so that, basically, when you see that droid running around, it's kind of like how Mark Ruffalo plays the Hulk, or how Mark Rylance plays the BFG in that new Spielberg film. You know, like where cool. it's going to be his movements and to some degree, I mean, it's a droid. It doesn't seem, he's not going to have muscles. So there's not a lot of movement in the face. And certainly Anthony Daniels brought to life C-3PO without moving the face at all.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to get, you know, you're going to get his movements and his attitude as the character.
It's definitely going to make a cool-looking droid. I can't wait to see how that portrayed.
I can't wait. There's so much. I hate to say it, but, like, I'm out of time. We're having way too much fun. Too much. We're just going to have to solve it, Anthony, and have you back on very soon. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Awesome. I can't. Man, I've been such a fan of your work. I will never forget that Episode 7 panel. That was just crazy.
I appreciate that.
So much fun. So we will be back in touch with Anthony, and we'll hit more of the news and y'all's emails next week. But man, Anthony, you gave an inside perspective in a way that we couldn't have otherwise possibly known. It's much better to hear it from you, and keep up the good work, man.
Yes, I appreciate it. Thanks
let us know, like, any is there any way, any places that you'd like to send folks, anything you're up to these days? If how can folks find you online?
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter at Breznican. It's Breznican, and I'm just keeping the pages of EW filled at the moment, and that's about it. That's where I am.
Awesome sauce. Yeah, definitely follow him on Twitter. We're gonna have the links to that all, as well as all the stories we've talked about, the photo galleries. We have a great piece. Shout out to Michael Dare on the writing staff, who did a breakdown on the Star Wars Report blog of all the news as well. We're gonna have links to everything for episode 228 of the Star Wars Report podcast. Make sure you're following us. It's at Star Wars Report, facebook.com/StarWarsReport, and then of course following me. I'm on Twitter and Snapchat and Instagram. It's just at the Riley Guy. I'll be posting all kinds of stuff from my grand Europe trip, which will of course include Celebration in London. So you can follow me there to catch all of that awesome stuff. Remember, Celebration London podcast stage, specifically the 1/4 stage, 12:30 Saturday of Celebration. Be there or be square. Just confirmed the location and time for our meetup. I can't actually make the official announcement until we get one final heads up/confirmation, but it will be at 6:30 p.m. local time on the Saturday of Celebration, which will be right after the Rebels panel, so that'll be nice. So make sure you're at the meetup, make sure you're at the show at Celebration, and make sure you're also following Mr. Mark Herleman. He's at Illogical Rogue 2 on Twitter and on all the other social media. And again, another big shout out and thank you to our producer Bruce this week. You can catch him as well on Twitter. It's at Admiral_Rex. And then that's it, folks. We will catch you guys next time. May the Force be with you, and remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. that's all, folks. Habity-habity-habity-habity-hab. Doo-doo-doo. All right.
It cut off there at the end. I don't know.
Actually, that was it worked out okay because we just had an internet blip. But that's all. Let me shut off the old recorder here. Boom.